How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Rosebrough, Jonathan Fisk, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. My particular stripe of Reformation theology, Lutheran theology, sometimes likes to refer to itself as confessional Lutheranism. Now, that's to distinguish itself from kind of the popular Lutheranism in America today that is decidedly liberal, very fast and loose with Holy Scripture, and really only has a very tenuous historical connection to the confessional documents of the 16th century and the Lutheran Reformation. So we use that term confessional Lutheran. Now, that could be a little misleading sometimes because every confession of faith within Christendom is confessional to one degree or another. Even those who claim to have no confessions or creed, well, that's their confession or creed. No creed but the Bible. That's a creed. That's a confession. And, of course, many have their own confessions. They're connected to them either loosely or rather tightly. What does it mean to be a confessional Christian? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. During this first hour of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon, we're going to be listening to my presentation from the first annual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. I'm going to make the case for confessional Christianity. A little bit later in hour two, Pastor Will Wheaton at the same conference making his case for classical Christian worship. Now, back in 2013, I was asked to make this presentation at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference on confessional Christianity, a subject that is near and dear to my heart. Let's hear why.
For those of you who don't know me or haven't met me, I'm Todd Wilkin. I host Issues Etc. I hope that rings a bell. I have the honor of kicking this off somehow by talking to you tonight about the case for confessional Christianity. And as I was contemplating that subject, it occurred to me that what I'm really doing is simply making the case for Christianity, because I simply do not know of any form of Christianity all across the spectrum of confessions and teachings that isn't confessional, whether it acknowledges that or not. To be a Christian is to confess. It is that simple. If you don't confess, if you do not have a confession of faith, that is a statement of faith or something that you believe, I don't know what you are, but you cannot, by definition, be a Christian. Christians have substance to the faith, and the substance of that faith is their confession. Now, there are segments of Christianity that don't regard themselves as confessional. They might say, we have no confession but the Bible, something like that. In that case, that statement, no confession but the Bible, is their confession of faith. It doesn't tell you anything whatsoever about what they believe. Because Mormons say that the Bible's part of their confession too. And every brand of Christianity, regardless of where it falls, at least do a little tip of the hat to the Bible. They say, do you believe what's in the Bible? Yes, in some qualified sense or unqualified sense. So for someone to say, I have no confession but the Bible, that's their confession of faith. The only problem with it is it doesn't tell you anything whatsoever about what they believe. It confesses nothing. And that's a kind of confessional Christianity too. So Roman Catholics are confessional Christians. Baptists are confessional Christians. Non-denominational Christians are confessional Christians. They don't all confess the same thing. In fact, they confess very, very different things. But they do have a confession of faith nonetheless. What I want to talk about is the confession of faith that is the historic Catholic one Christian faith that Lutherans claim as their confession. People will say, what makes a Lutheran? Is it the sign on the door? No. Between here and anywhere any of you came from, even if you only came as close as from St. Louis, you can drive down a lot of streets and see churches that have Lutheran on the sign. That means nothing. The proof of whether or not they're Lutheran is not out on the sign, but in the sanctuary on Sunday morning. What is preached? What is practiced? In essence, what is confessed? So Lutherans have a confession of faith that's very formal. We have the Book of Concord. It was ratified, signed, whatever, accepted in 1580. It was the product of a long process of debate, dialogue, discussion, from the time of the Augsburg Confession to the time of the ratification of the Book of Concord. Almost a lifetime passed, which should teach us something in the confessing church today about patience. Luther didn't live to see the Promised Land. He didn't live to see the ratification of the Book of Concord. We can say very safely, based upon the students of his who were there, who did live to see it, that he would have wholeheartedly agreed with the final product. That's what the entire last section of the Book of Concord is about. Essentially, the next generation of Lutherans after Luther's death trying to answer the question, would Luther have confessed this? And they weren't trying to center the confession of faith on the person of Luther, but he was their touchstone. He was their gold standard. The things that had already been laid down in the Lutheran confessions by way of the Augsburg Confession and its defense and Luther's catechisms and the other parts of the confession, the very last part of that entire Book of Concord, the formula of Concord, is essentially saying, would Luther have confessed this? And they rejected the things that they did not believe that Luther would have confessed based upon God's word, and they confessed the things that they thought he would, and I think he would have as well. So we've got a book, literally a Book of Concord. Someone comes up to you and says, what are you? And you say, I'm a Lutheran. The first thing they're going to think is, oh, you're one of those Lutherans. One of those kind of California Lutherans out there. And they've read in the paper, first openly gay bishop, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. That's what Lutheran means to most people who don't know what Lutheran means. And after you've said, no, 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 I'm not one of those, you might say, well, what kind of a Lutheran are you? And you will say, well, I am the kind that confesses what is written and confessed in the Book of Concord. And that's a good way of defining what a Lutheran is, what a confessing Christian is, what a Christian who says everything in the church's history that is true and right is continued and confessed and said and practiced in my church. Did you realize this? This is what the confessors, the Lutheran confessors of the Reformation era, really truly believed with their whole hearts. They believed that they were saying nothing less and nothing more than what the church, the apostolic church, the church of Peter and of Paul and of all of the apostles, they were believing and teaching and confessing nothing more than what the apostolic church had believed and taught and confessed and practiced. And these men believed that with their whole hearts. They believed it with their lives. They say it again and again and again in the Book of Concord. And that's why that book is so valuable. I'm a very simple-minded person, and I look out over the swath of my own church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and I try to identify what's wrong, because something obviously is. And I say to myself, because I'm very simple-minded, well, maybe it's something as simple as we don't believe what we say we believe anymore. Now, there are all sorts of human problems that a church body can undergo. Money, membership, all those kinds of things that may or may not have to do with what a church believes and teaches and confesses. My dad always said, if a problem can be solved with money, it's not a problem. Money might be a problem, but a problem that can be bought away, that can be spent away, is not a problem. It's the ones you cannot buy your way out of. And those are the real problems besetting the church today. Not the ones that show up in the offering plate or the number of people in the pews. The real problems that beset a church that often have their symptoms in things like money and membership are the kind that you can't buy your way out of. But you can confess your way out of them. And I was thinking to myself the other day, I think the conclusion I've come to is that a Lutheran pastor ought to know the Book of Concord as well as he knows the Bible. Not because the Book of Concord is equal to the Bible, but because the Book of Concord is what the Bible says. Maybe we don't believe what we say we believe. Or what, in the cases of many pastors, what we said we believed 25 years ago in a sweaty church with a bunch of sweaty pastors putting their hands over our heads. We said we believed it. We said it was our confession. We said we would practice it. And like so many vows and promises we make, we started breaking it the next Sunday. That's the book. The book is important. The book is the text. The book is the reference to what you believe, teach, and confess. I'll go a step further. I think Lutheran lay people ought to know their confession of faith as well as they know the Bible. And I'm not alone. How many of you were required to memorize the small catechism at some point in your life if you come from a Lutheran church? I don't remember anything other than having to memorize the catechism from catechism class, except ogling girls and doodling in my book. We had these big green books that were a lesson by lesson through the catechism. They were kind of a lesson by lesson through the catechism. The catechism was tangentially related to some of the material contained in this book. But in the wisdom of my pastor, he still required all the kids to memorize the actual text of Luther's Small Catechism. He was teaching us that to know that text is as important in a world of varying confessions and varying beliefs about what the Bible teaches as knowing the Bible itself. It is no substitute for knowing the Bible, but it must come with knowing the Bible. And I would say that of any person of any confession, if you're going to be a Roman Catholic, then you should know what your church teaches and confesses, and you should know it as good as you know the Bible. Much of what you're going to confess there is wrong. But if I can't convince you of that, then at least know what it is your church believes, teaches, and confesses.
On this Friday afternoon, May the 8th, we are listening to my presentation from the First Annual Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference, Making the Case for Confessional Christianity. When we come back, we will take up the importance of the book, the importance of the Book of Concord to confessional Lutheranism. Stay tuned. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Do you long for a church where the gospel of the sinner's free justification is front and center, and yet where a robust sacramental life is confessed and lived? Do you long for a church that rejoices in the sacred scriptures as the sole basis for the church's teaching and proclamation, yet values and listens to the witness of the ancient fathers and councils? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We are what you've been looking for. Find a Christ-centered, cross-focused church near you on the Find the Church page at issuesetc.org.
Lutheran. It's not a label. It's a confession. You're listening to Issues Etc.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at LCIW.org.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Friday afternoon, we're listening to a presentation I made back in 2013 at the very first Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, kicking off the conference, making the case for confessional Christianity. Of course, these confessions come in the form, for Lutherans, in the form of a certain book, a particular book that remains unaltered from the time of its publication in 1580, the Book of Concord.
How many of you own a Book of Concord? Oh, that's good. That's good. How many of your congregations teach, not in some general sense, but actually teach the confessions at some point, like in the course of a year or over the course of a couple of years? They don't always teach the confessions, maybe. Hands up. Hands up. That's very good. This rather grumpy-looking man sitting over here with a push-broom mustache, my partner in crime, Michael Cum, who you may not recognize to look at him, but you, if he spoke, you would know his voice because he's the voice of Issues, etc. He's that voice that's always barking things at you during the breaks. He followed me in the parish, the little parish that I served for 10 years. 167 people all said, maybe on a good Sunday, 60 people in church. He followed me there doing a vacancy. And I went to hear him preach, and I said, boy, it just sounded like I was listening to Luther preach. It was like he was reading a Luther sermon. I don't know if he was. Maybe he was. And I thought, good. My former congregation is being well taken care of by this vacancy pastor who knows law and gospel, and who knows what it means to be Lutheran, and I was very gratified. But I was even more gratified when I talked to some of those former parishioners. They make apple butter every year. It's a huge operation. 10 big copper kettles, you know what I'm talking about, lined up on a big driveway, fires going all day long from 5 o'clock in the morning until after dark in October, cooking down the apples, with old ladies who can barely walk, walking around with wooden spoons, testing this to see. They have some sort of they can measure the specific gravity of substances by just looking at them. They didn't even taste it. They just let the spoon drip, and they'd be like. Then they'd go back into the shed where they would, I don't know, contemplate apples or something. And everybody gets a chance to stir. You have to have very long poles because the fire is very hot. Big paddles, and you stir the apple butter, and you stir the apple butter. Because if you don't stir the apple butter, it burns, and then someone gets blamed. And they didn't even let me, as their parish pastor, stir the apple butter for about 4 years. I had to come and observe the stirring of the apple butter, study it, learn its ways. Then finally they would put one of these in my hands. I trembled as I stirred the apple butter, hoping that there would be no burnt spots. And of course they knew enough that there was always going to be some burnt spots at the bottom, for which the pastor always got blamed, whether he had stirred that pot or not. And I'm talking to one of my former parishioners while we're stirring apple butter side by side. And here's a man who never attended Bible class when I was there. He came to church faithfully, but he never attended Bible class. And he says to me, and this was so shocking to me, he said, hey, Pastor. And Pastor Cum was still doing the vacancy there. I'm going to read this Book of Concord. I never knew that existed. This is great stuff, he said. Pastor's got us reading the Book of Concord. The reader's edition of the Book of Concord had just come out, right? Is that correct? And Pastor had, he had him reading it. That's a novel idea. A reader's edition? What do you do with it? Sad to say, CPH probably sent that out to every pastor free in the synod, and most of them didn't get read. They got put on the shelf. We'll just take Tappert down. We'll just put up this new one and see which has collected more dust 10 years from now. And it stunned me. And I thought to myself, I'd been that pastor, the congregation's pastor, for 10 years. And I'd certainly taught in accord with the Lutheran confessions, and I'd taught sections of the Lutheran confessions, but I'd never actually sat down and studied it with my parish. And I was ashamed of myself. And here comes this vacancy pastor. He just kind of walks in there and says, let's read the Book of Concord. And they're all gratified to know what it is they believe. And the guy actually said to me, I really have enjoyed doing this because now I don't have to ask pastor what I believe anymore. Have you ever had this, pastors who are here? They walk up to you, hey, pastor, what do we believe about this? And if you're feeling particularly smart, Alec, you say to them, I don't know, what do you believe about that? I know what I believe. But it's an honest, good question. They're saying, what is our confession? Tell me what our confession is. That's the book, and it's very important. It should be known, it should be understood, it should be read, it should be digested. It should be actually memorized as much as it can be memorized. But there is another place where confessional Christianity has its home. It's one thing to have the book. It's one thing to study the book. It's one thing to know it and to teach it. But it occurred to me that the real locus, the real home of confessing Christianity is in, it is informal confessions. I'm not setting those aside. But the real locus of confessing Christianity is actually Sunday morning in places like this. That's where the confession of the church meets the world. That's where the confession gets confessed. It's one thing for a pastor to sit in his study, as he should, and study the Book of Concord regularly, every week. That's necessary. But if it never makes it out of his study into Sunday morning, where it's not only confessed, but it's practiced, then that confession has just stayed, it's benefited the pastor, it's benefited those whom he teaches, but it's intended to be practiced. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about the church making its confession in the things that make the church. Let's start with baptism. It's not a coincidence that when we baptize, we confess. We do several things. We say the Lord's Prayer. Did you know that's part of our confession? Sure it is. We speak the Apostles' Creed. Now, we don't just do that because it's something to do or it seems right. We are acknowledging by doing this, by speaking the ancient creed of the church along with baptism, that we are baptizing this little sinner into this confession, into what this confession means for their whole life, into the name of this God that we confess. And I wonder, maybe that might be at the real root of a church like ours, like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, that has everything on paper, but less and less in the course of its life has those things in practice. I wonder if that's the only thing keeping some churches alive, is that they, for whatever reason they may not know, still confess the creed when they baptize somebody, even though they may have left the creed behind long ago every other Sunday. Well, I guess we kind of have to say that creed thing when we baptize someone. And they may not say the creed again until it's time to baptize someone. Preaching. Preaching is quintessentially confessing to the world. And rid from your mind once and for all the false dichotomy that preaching on Sunday morning is not witnessing, is not doing evangelism. It is, in fact, the primary locus of evangelism. The primary place of evangelism is the pulpit. Well, he's just preaching to a bunch of Christians. Christians need evangelizing too. They need the gospel too. And you know, in the course of preaching to all those Christians, he's probably snagging some unbelievers too. But more importantly, what he's doing is he is confessing so that those who have heard that confession of the gospel may confess in their individual vocations. But if they're not hearing it from the pulpit, they won't be repeating it around the water cooler. They will be repeating something, but not the church's confession. Teaching goes along with preaching. It's a different forum. There are different expectations. But that is where our confession meets the world. The words that we confess encounter the world that does not believe what we confess in our teaching.
Let's take a break, and when we come back on this Friday afternoon, we'll continue listening to the presentation I made back in 2013, making the case for confessional Christianity at the 2013 Issues, Etc., Making the Case Conference. We'll take up the issue of putting that confession into practice, in particular at the altar. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot-button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Come to the end of a week here where we are listening to the audio from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference back in 2013, our very first conference for Issues Etc. We're listening to my presentation, Making the Case for Confessional Christianity, for about another 10 minutes or so, and then Pastor Will Whedon is going to be on deck. He's going to be making the case for classical Christian worship again from the first annual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Well, we talked before about how the confessions come in the form of a book, but of course that book isn't supposed to simply sit on the shelf. It's to be opened, studied, read, memorized if possible, and especially put into practice especially at the altar.
Communion. Now, this is a concept that has been lost a long time ago in many churches, but it once was the standard in all of the church, and that is to commune is to confess. In particular, to commune together is to confess together. I'm really happy with what Lutheran Service Book did in one of its variations on the communion liturgy. It brought back the words, and perhaps they'll sound familiar to you. It brought back the words, "For as often as we eat this bread and drink this cup, we proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." You know what Paul is saying there? He's actually saying two things. He's saying, we don't commune without preaching Christ. That's the obvious meaning that we often miss there. He's saying, as a matter of fact, when we commune, there is always preaching. We always proclaim the death of Christ. He's also saying that when we commune, we proclaim the death of Christ. And I don't see much difference between proclaiming the death of Christ and confessing Christ, making that confession of faith. Your participation in the Lord's Supper is a confession of faith, and that's why for millennia, the church practiced closed communion. To commune together is to confess together. And if you don't confess together, you don't commune together. It's that simple. And we could name a bunch of other things. We could name the recitation of the creed. How many of you in the course of, it has to have been a month ago when Trinity Sunday rolled around, dusted off the kinkuke bolt, the whosoever wishes, the Athanasian Creed. How many of you dusted it off and said it? Mm-hmm. Good. That's good to hear. We shouldn't allow it to gather dust. It's long. Think about how much time you waste on Facebook every day. Think about how long you can say the Athanasian Creed during a commercial break in your favorite television program. Well, I guess maybe my illustration there isn't so good because we've lost patience for that too, haven't we? My wife is TiVoing the Cardinal game. I've actually got it going right here. So that when I get home, if they've lost, I'm just going to say no. Pour myself a bourbon. If they've won, and it was particularly interesting, I will just spin through everything except for the interesting parts, especially spin through the commercials. But if you were watching it in real time and you had to endure the commercials, the Athanasian Creed takes no more time to say than that commercial break. I do not know why people gripe and moan on Trinity Sunday. Oh my goodness, that added 4 minutes to the service. 4 minutes of my life that I will never get back. The ancient church could write creeds that long because the ancient church was not in a hurry to say what it needs to say, to confess what it needs to confess. And it knew that important things sometimes take time to say. Not everything can be distilled down to the content of a bumper sticker. We've tried to do bumper stickers on issues, etc., and we've just opted with our website because we say, well, how do we brand ourselves on a bumper sticker? What do you say about the show that fits on a bumper sticker that people can read going 70 miles an hour? And our name says nothing. Issues, etc., says nothing. It says everything and thereby says nothing, right? What it's a show about, everything. Oh, okay. And we've just given up because there's no little phrase that we could put there that says everything about the show, and every little phrase that we could put there just says something about the show. So you kind of have to choose what that something is that you want to say. Now, you might be gathering at this point in my presentation to you that I have absolutely nothing profound to say. If you said, I can't wait to hear what Wilkin has to say about this, some earth-shattering new idea, and then you come here and you've paid your money and you sit down and you endure everything and you say, wow, that sounds a lot like what my pastor says every Sunday. Good. Good. That's the way it ought to be. Now, I'm not saying that the rest of our presenters won't wow you with earth-shattering things, but that's not my job. Perhaps we should ask the question, what is non-confessional Christianity, or something it attempts to be, non-confessional Christianity? And we can go back and talk about the very same things: baptism, preaching, teaching, communing, worshiping. You will see, you will hear, you will experience a church that is trying its hardest not to confess in the way that it baptizes, in the way that it communes, in the way that it preaches, in the way that it teaches, in the way that it worships. That's why when we often talk about these big trends on the program, and we're talking about, say, pop American Christianity, one of our favorite whipping boys. I've been beating that horse for almost 20 years, still not dead. And the first question that we almost always ask, this comes not from the mind of the host, but from the brilliant mind of the producer. The first question we almost always ask when we talk about any of those kind of trends, secularized Christianity, pop American Christianity, you name it, is, how would I know if my church is practicing this thing, or is part of this movement? What would I see in here on Sunday morning that would tell me if my church is caught up in this thing? Seeker-driven movement, Well, what would I see and hear on Sunday morning that would tell me whether or not the seeker-driven movement has come to visit my congregation? Yeah, well, right, you'd see all those things. You would see what you would see in virtually every church in America. And you'd see the same thing over and over and over again. You could go to Chicago, you could go to Los Angeles, you could go any place, and you will find it, and it will be as cookie cutter as any church growth pastor imagines all these liturgical churches are. Oh, they're all just doing the same thing every Sunday morning, and they're all doing the same thing, singing the same hymns. We don't want to be like that. Reading the same Bible passages. Why do they do that? Because they're all confessing the same thing. And so are the churches that aren't. It is remarkable how consistently Christless the preaching is, how consistently self-centered the music is, how consistently absent the sacrament is in those churches. Why do they all look and sound the same way? Why are they all singing the same seven top-listed contemporary Christian songs? Why? I can tell you why. Because they're all confessing the same thing. And the real problem arises when churches that have something on the sign outside that says different, but when you walk in, it says Lutheran on the sign, you walk in and it's non-denominational. Which is the real confession? I'm telling you with absolutely no reservation, the real confession is what they are preaching and teaching and practicing and singing and praying on Sunday morning. That's the real confession. I'm not telling you that there are no confessions or to put the book aside. I'm just saying where that confession meets the world is Sunday morning. Sunday morning isn't a contrivance by the church to get people together to take an offering. Sunday morning is what the earliest Christians recognized it is. The Lord's Day. The time for, it's the new Sabbath. It's a time for Christians to shut up, sit down, stop working, and let Jesus speak and do and act. I love Hermann Zassa. If you don't know Hermann Zassa, you should. He's got several excellent books. This is the one that I probably love the most, Here We Stand. And Zassa was writing out of a European context. He was writing out of a post-World War II context, most of what he wrote. But he was a keen observer of American Lutherans, of his brothers across the sea. And he was a singular genius when it came to boiling what it means to be a confessing Christian, what it means to be a confessing church, down. Now remember, for a German, to boil something down means that it's only 1/4 as long as it was to begin with, but that's still very, very long.
In about 10 minutes on this Friday afternoon, Pastor Will Wheaton will be making his presentation from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in 2013, making the case for classical Christian worship. In the meantime, we'll conclude my presentation, Making the Case for Confessional Christianity, right after the break. What does it mean to be a Christian woman in our feminized secular society? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is Ladylike, Living Biblically. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Ladylike by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. A great Mother's Day gift, Ladylike, Living Biblically, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May.
Confessional Lutherans, we've got your back. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be concluding our listening to the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in 2013, my presentation, Making the Case for Confessional Christianity. No such presentation would be complete without a quote from Hermann Zassi.
I'm going to read to you. Not supposed to do that on the radio, but I'll do it here. Because the words are just so good, I can't improve upon them. And as I told you before, I'm not going to tell you anything profound, anything earth-shattering, anything probably you haven't heard before. And here's the proof. Zassa came up with it a long time ago. Those men of the age of orthodoxy excelled our age in at least one respect, writes Zassa. They knew one thing which the modern man does not know and does not care to know. They knew that as individuals and as nations, we literally live by the truth and literally die by falsehood. Hence, they never shared the cold skepticism and wearied resignation of modern relativism. This is a guy who was writing before relativism was a really in vogue idea, but he saw it coming. Which holds that there are only relative truths, no absolute truths, and that it consequently does not pay to wrestle for the truth. Nor with a bold will to believe did they have to satisfy themselves with half-truth or penultimate truth in order to have some ground on which to stand. Their quest after the truth, their struggling for the truth, was conditioned, moreover, by the conviction that there is one who is the truth in person. Did you hear that? Truth is not an idea. Truth is a person. One who said to truth seekers of all ages, everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. One who promised his church on earth that his Holy Spirit will guide them into all truth. It is from this point of view that the mighty struggle of the Reformation age, the battling of the rising confessional churches for pure doctrine of divine truth must be understood. Now, there is a guy who can boil something down. He's answering the question, what was the Reformation all about? Why the big fuss in the 16th century? He says, because there were men of conviction who understood that the truth isn't an idea, it's a person, Jesus. And that if he is the truth and he is ours, then we can have the truth. We can confess the truth. We can practice the truth. We don't have to settle for half-truths, penultimate truths, close approximations to the truth. This is why we can say as Lutherans of our confession that what is in our confession is absolutely true. This is why we require our pastors to swear on their collars that this one true Christian faith that they have learned is their confession personally. and that they will, at the pain of having their collars removed, believe it, preach it, and practice it until the church asks them to stop. Because we don't have to settle for anything less than the truth. This is a counterintuitive and a revolutionary idea that few in the world, perhaps as few in the church, are still willing to believe. There is such a thing as the truth, and it can be known, and it can be confessed because of Jesus. It's not just his truth, it is that he is the truth. One more quote. What am I doing on time? Thank you. Is that till Q&A? Is that till the end? Huh? Oh, golly. I have to pick and choose now. I've chosen. I love this. Again, Hermann Zassa. The Evangelical Lutheran Church is a church which has been sentenced to death by the world. For 400 years now, and by the way, we're now going on 500 years. For 400 years now, it has been threatened by the sentence of death pronounced upon it by that official who possesses the highest authority on earth in the eyes of millions of Christians, because he presumes to be the vicar of Christ on earth. And then he goes on to talk about how we've also received the sentence of death not only from the Pope, we've received the sentence of death from our brothers in the Reformation, the Reformed. That was of particular interest to Hermann Zassa at the time. And he says here, our church, which has always been anxious to maintain its connection with Christianity of all times and places, has never made light of this sentence. We've always taken that death sentence seriously. And he concludes, although it invites new death sentences by doing so, the Lutheran Church remains steadfast in its opposition to this tremendous temptation to abandon the faith of the Reformation. Like the other churches, it is looking forward to the day when the divided church will be one. But it knows, too, that it cannot bring about unity by ceasing to take the search for truth seriously. For the prayer that they may all be one is inseparably connected with another petition, sanctify them with your truth, thy word is truth. So we pray with the fathers of the Reformation in the same hymn, Lord, keep us steadfast in thy word and send peace and unity on earth. Zassa says, the Lutheran Church has been bearing up under the reproaches of the world for the past 400 years because it believes that it is the Lord who passes judgment and that the existence of the church depends on his judgment alone. So, in answer to all the calls from outside the church and inside the church to just shut up, go along, compromise, stop searching for the truth, stop telling us you found it, we leave the final judgment on our confession to Christ. If you read your Book of Concord, you will find it there, I believe, in the preface, or maybe the ending of one of the sections. I'd have to look it up because it just occurs to me. Almost exactly this very idea. The confessors say, Christ is our judge. Christ is the judge as to what we say, and we will say here without any reservation that what we are confessing here is the absolute, pure, 100% truth, because we have bound it, we've tied it, we have drawn it up out of the well of Scripture without changing it, without compromising it. And if we are wrong, Christ alone is our judge. But we're not. We live in an age where it's not popular to say that you're right. because people misunderstand that you're making some sort of a brag, some sort of a boast about yourself personally. The confessing church makes no boasts about itself. This truth that we have and that we confess is not our making. It's not our doing. They are not our words. They are not our actions. They are Christ at work in the world, making his bold confession through us. Thank you very much.
That's my 2013 presentation on making the case for confessional Christianity. When we come back, Pastor Will Wheaton will make the case for classical Christian worship from the same conference. Here's what one reviewer said about Ladylike, The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for May. I guarantee you will not be able to put this book down. Sisters Rosie and Rebecca write in a style crystal clear and magically engaging, all the while gleefully butchering sacred cultural cows and serving up a rich feast of meaty delights for anyone, especially any Christian woman. Find out more about Ladylike at our website, issuesetc.org, or give Concordia Publishing House a call, 1-800-325-3040. Hour 2 of Issues Etc. is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hollywood's attitude toward Christianity, the Bible's influence on the U.S. Constitution, the decline of biblical preaching, the connection between biblical illiteracy and Western morality. You'll find these essays and more in the new book, The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, The Place of the Holy Scriptures in the Faith and Life of Confessional Lutherans. Check it out at shop.logia.org. The Word They Still Shall Let Remain, shop.logia.org.